Om has a very strong vibration. It has the same vibration that is present in the nature around you. So every time you chant Om, it immediately helps you raise your vibration. Sexual energy is a very powerful energy. We think of sexual energy only in terms of pleasure and desire. But now think of it from the spiritual point of view. Sexual energy is so powerful that it can create life. So Patanjali is saying it cannot be wasted. Even today we have more than 1,000 gods and goddesses, because every god, goddess, they represent energy. Every god has a feminine part, or every goddess has a masculine half. No energy is complete without a masculine and a feminine. And that's why whenever we talk about gods and goddesses in India, the god would also have a wife, the goddess would have a husband. But what they mean by that is the positive and the negative, or the feminine and the masculine, they form a complete energy, because that is what is in nature. It's not because we say, okay, your religion is not good enough, you all need to become Hindus. It's got nothing to do with that. You can be a Christian, still chant mantras. The only goal actually of yoga or Hinduism or anything is to raise your vibrations. Whenever you are doing a service where you don't expect anything in return, that is karma yoga. So let's start with Om. Okay. So Om is the smallest mantra. Om is also called a Bija mantra. Bija means a seed, because it's tiny. Om, it's just two sounds. It's called a Bija mantra because it's as small as a seed. Okay. Bija se comme une graine. Donc, parce que c'est petit comme une graine, Om. C'est pourquoi ça s'appelle un Bija mantra. Now, mantras are sound energies. Mantras are energies that are encased in a capsule of a sound. Okay? Every sound has energy. You can hear me sitting over there only because my voice has energy. Okay? This is basic physics. There are the air particles between us. It vibrates with the energy of my voice, and that's how they reach your ears. Okay, that's why you can hear me. Anything you say has energy. Okay, now mantras have very powerful positive energy. The ancient mantras, Vedic mantras, were sounds that the sages heard in deep meditation. It was not something that was created by humans. When you go into deep meditation, and it happens for everyone, it can even happen for you. When you're into deep meditation, you can see and hear things. And it's not hallucination. It's just that your mind becomes so still that you can perceive other forms of reality, which we cannot see with our naked eyes in day-to-day life, because your mind is still. Okay, you can observe and perceive other forms of what's happening around you. So mantras were sounds that the sages heard in deep meditation. Now, Om has a very strong vibration. It has the same vibration that is present in the nature around you. So every time we chant Om, because it is so easy to chant Om, it is taken as one of the mantras that you can chant anytime. You don't have to prepare or learn anything. It immediately helps you raise your vibration. So before any spiritual practice, you chant Om, because yoga is not just a physical exercise, okay, it's a spiritual practice. So you chant Om, you immediately raise your vibrations, and then you start your class. Then you start any practice, okay? Because even if you're feeling bad, just chanting Om will raise your vibrations to match the nature, the universe around you, okay? Now this is Om. Now how do you chant Om? So there are three syllables that make Om: A, U, and M. A and U form the sound O. This is just Hindi and Sanskrit grammar. Okay, you don't have to understand why A and U form O. That's how the grammar works. A and U make the sound O, and then you have the M. Now, because two syllables form O, the O is twice as long as the M. So when you're chanting, you go Om. But the ma is also equally important. You cannot skip the ma. You cannot finish your entire breath in chanting Om. Now that's an incomplete mantra. The m part is very important. It's like the sound of the bees. Le son d'abeille. It's a m. Now, you know, honey never rots. It can never go bad. And it doesn't go bad because of these vibrations. The wings of the bees, the vibration, the sound that they make from the wings, because that vibration is so powerful, that's the vibration in honey. And honey never rots. So you see that there's a meditation also where you make this sound, where you just do it's a very powerful meditation. So the sound in the om is very important. Okay, so always keep a little breath so that you can chant the completely. Okay, don't finish everything in O. Now, because we're talking about honey, I just want to add, it's not related at all. There are three foods in yoga or Ayurveda. Okay, that are very important. That doesn't matter what kind of body type you have or what kind of digestion you're going through. But there are three foods that are important for everyone, which you should not skip. So one is coconut. One is ghee. Ghee is clarified butter in English. But clarified butter is just the translation. Okay, beurre clarifié. It's just a translation. It doesn't really define what is ghee. Ghee is when you cook cream or yogurt for a long time and you separate the milk solids and the fat. So this fat is supposed to be very good for you. That is what even in the restaurant, it was in your rotis last night with the bread that you ate. Okay, so now it's easily available everywhere. You can find it in every supermarket. So there is coconut, there's ghee, and there is honey. So it doesn't matter what body type you have, these three foods everyone should eat because they're very good for you. At least in this part of the world, you can eat it every day. Like honey might be hot, you can say, but it's hot for tropical climates. You know, we come from India, so it can be hot. Here at 30, 35 degrees, you can consume everything every day. Yeah, a teaspoon of ghee every day is very good. In fact, with every meal, you can have ghee. And coconut is always good anyway.
It doesn't matter if the coconut is in the milk or the water or the pieces of
coconut. Every part of coconut apparently is very good. The water, you know, it especially during heat, like coconut water is the best. Even when if you go exercise, if you can find good coconut water to take with you because it has electrolytes, so it helps you hydrate better than water. Then eating coconut is good. And coconut milk is a very new thing actually, because coconut milk is basically ground coconut. So it's one or the other same thing. But yeah, anyway. Okay, let's start with what is yoga. So there are three definitions that I personally like very much, which according to me explain completely what is yoga. Okay, the first definition is yoga sa chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is that which helps us calm the ever-changing moods of the mind. Now, about 5,000 years ago, there was a sage called Patanjali. So, up until Patanjali, yoga was always passed down from student to teacher by word of mouth. Okay, from guru to their disciples by word of mouth. But during one of the classes of Patanjali, once, when he was in a talk like this, his students started to note down everything Patanjali was saying. Now, his students were noting down what he was saying. So they were noting it down in shorthand, like secretaries do, very fast. Okay. Now, all our knowledge of yoga today comes from mostly from Patanjali. So Patanjali is considered as the father of yoga. Now, this knowledge is today in a book called the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Now, Yoga Sutra of Patanjali, because they are sutras, sutra means a thread, and it's called a thread because they're not complete sentences, because the students note it down in shorthand, and they are like that exactly. So if you ever buy this book, you should always buy it from a good translator or a good guru who you know would have not lost the meaning in translation. Okay, that who has not just translated anything. Because half the time what happens is they put their own point of view and the whole meaning changes. Okay, like how it happens with all religions also. So what you need is somebody, a good master who's done a good translation. Okay, so you understand the meaning well. Because most of our knowledge comes from there, Patanjali, being the father of yoga, says yoga is that which helps you calm the ever-changing moods of the mind. What does he mean by the ever-changing moods of the mind? Our mind changes its opinion every second. Okay? Like right now, everything is all right. You're sitting in a room, you're studying yoga philosophy, but you might suddenly receive a message on your phone that will completely change your entire day. Till now, everything was going fine. Now the whole day goes down the drain. Okay? And then you decide, oh, my day is going really bad. Suddenly you might get a good news. And again, everything will turn for the better. And then something else might happen and the mood will change again. Then something else, someone might say something, so something might pass, a message, or you might hear something, you might watch something. And the mind keeps changing. The whole day long, you can't decide, am I having a good day or am I having a bad day? Do I have a good life or do I have a bad life? Okay, because the mind is not stable. So according to Patanjali, yoga helps you calm these ever-changing moods of the mind. It helps you keep a balanced state of mind, which will not happen just through asanas, through yoga postures. And that is why we need yoga philosophy to understand what is the philosophy of yoga. Why do we practice asanas? Why? What is yoga? What is the lifestyle of yoga that will help us bring our mind to a stable state, okay, to a balanced state? The second is yujyate anena iti yoga. Yoga is that which unites. Yoga is a kinu uni. But unite us with what? Unite us, this physical body, with our higher self. This physical mind with our higher mind. Because you are all sitting here in a yoga class, you've taken out time out of your life to come for 3-4 days for a yoga retreat. So I'm guessing there is some level of spirituality in you. Okay, even if you don't believe in God per se, okay, you believe in a higher power. You believe that there is an energy around us, something strong that controls what is happening, that has a lot more power than us. When we feel completely out of control, we know that there is something else that is in control. Yoga helps you unite with this energy. Okay, yoga helps you understand that this energy that is all around you, this divinity or God, if you call it, is also within you. That you are not just a creation of God. You are also God. Because you come from God, you are a part of God. That is what is within you. And that is what makes you whole. So a lot of us feel incomplete. A lot of us feel something is missing from our lives and we need to find it somewhere. What yoga is telling us, that we are complete as we are. We are perfect as we are. Because we are not only God's creations, we are also the creator. A part of that creator is within us. We can create our own lives. And yoga helps you understand that. It helps you unite this physical being, this physical mind with the higher mind, with this divinity which is within you, which we all have forgotten that we are divine beings, that God is within us. He's not in a church or a temple, or we don't have to go somewhere to find God. God is within us. And yoga helps you understand this. Okay? The last is samatvam yogucchate. Now, before we understand this, I would like to talk a bit about Hinduism to understand what is Hinduism. Okay? So, Hinduism was never a religion. And to a lot of extent, is still not a religion. It was more of a geographical identity. People who lived between the Hindu Kush mountains, which are today in Afghanistan, and the Indian Ocean. So everybody who lived between the Hindu Kush mountains and the Indian Ocean were all Hindus. Okay? Now Hindus had a certain lifestyle. So it is a very indigenous form of lifestyle, like you would today you would find in South America. In those days, even the Mayans had it and the Greeks had it. So where you worship the air, the sun, the moon, fire, everything basically nature is venerable, is worshipped. Okay, everything is God. So, a very indigenous form of lifestyle. That's why even today we have more than 1,000 gods and goddesses, because every god, goddess, they represent energy. Every god has a feminine part, or every goddess has a masculine half. Okay, no energy is complete without a masculine and a feminine. And that's why whenever we talk about gods and goddesses in India, the god would also have a wife, the goddess would have a husband. But what they mean by that is the positive and the negative, or the feminine and the masculine, they form a complete energy, because that is what is in nature. So basically nature was worshipped. Now yoga and Ayurveda and everything, they come from this lifestyle. They come from this place, okay, where the Hindus were practicing a certain kind of lifestyle. Now, what happened was there were a lot of foreign powers that came into India, like any other part of the world, whether they were Muslims or Christians or anything else. And when you try to convert people, especially in those days, it was not done with love. Okay, conversion was always done by force. Okay, you use the strength and power to try to convert people. And that's when the Hindus arose and they said, no, we are Hindus and we have our own way of life. We have our own way of worshipping. We don't want yours. And that's how Hinduism came into being. But Hinduism, even as a word, was not used until much recently, until the 17th or 18th century. Okay, and even now there is no, you can say, the chief of the religion. Okay, there is no governing body of the religion who decides how the religion should be, who should follow it, what are the rules and regulations. There is no governing body. We don't have a pope or anything that decides what is a good Hindu, what is a bad Hindu. There are no rules. Today, if you decide sitting here, I am a Hindu, I cannot say you are not. Okay, you can just decide like that because anyone can choose to be a Hindu. If you want to change your name, you change your name. If you don't want to change your name, you don't change your name. There is no religious practice that makes you change your name. People, when they go to India, they like to change their names. Okay, they call it spiritual names. But your name works perfectly fine. Okay, nothing. They, yeah.
You don't have baptism or something?
No, nothing at all. There is nothing at all. You can kill someone, still be a Hindu. You can not kill anyone, you'll still be a Hindu. You can do whatever you want. No rules at all. Because it was not a religion, it is still not a religion. For us, it is because we are born in that family and we took all those things for granted. And they are very much intertwined with life. Like, you cannot separate it. You cannot say, because I'm a practicing Hindu, I do all this. These are things that a lot of things that we never questioned. Because we were just brought up like that. We don't say we are religious, that's why we have to do this. No, even if you're not religious, you might do a few things because you see everyone around you is doing them, you know. It just becomes part of a lifestyle. Now, like the Christians have the Bible or the Muslims have the Quran, Hindus have a book called the Gita. Okay. Now in the Gita, it's the words of Krishna. Krishna is the god with the flute. Okay. Now again, as a result of colonization, Indian history was given the name of mythology. All our gods and goddesses, like you had Jesus Christ, we had a few of them also who walked earth, but they were called that they are mythology. Okay. Because when colonization happens, that's how you break the courage of a country. That's how you break the willpower of people, because you tell them that no, everything you believe is a lie. So what happened was the history was called as mythology. And that's why when we talk about Krishna, we just see a god with a flute, with a feather hat and everything. And the thing is, it was a real person who walked the country, who walked on earth. So Gita is the words of Krishna when he's talking to one of his disciples. And it's happening in a war scene, which is a completely different story, not important right now. But this entire book, which is one of the holiest books of Hinduism, is also only telling you to understand yoga. It's only telling you what is yoga. It's not telling you should get up in the morning and then pray to this god, that god, and this is your way of life. Nothing doing. It's just making you understand why have you taken birth on this earth? What is the purpose? What is your soul? And do yoga. Like, from beginning till the end, from the second chapter onwards, first chapter is still a bit of introduction of the war, but from the second chapter till the end, all Krishna is saying is do yoga, do yoga, do yoga. Okay, so that is why this book is a very important book, even for yoga practitioners. Like, everybody reads it once, happens to read it once, whether you are Hindu or not. So that's what I wanted to show you, that yoga and Ayurveda cannot be removed from Hinduism, or Hinduism cannot be removed from yoga and Ayurveda, because all of this go hand in hand. So when we chant mantras in our class, it's not because anyone wants to convert you. It's not because we say, okay, your religion is not good enough, you all need to become Hindus, or it's got nothing to do with that. You can be a Christian, still chant mantras. The only goal actually of yoga or Hinduism or anything is to raise your vibrations. That's the only purpose. You chant mantras because mantras have very powerful positive energy. And the Vedic mantras, because they were heard by sages in deep meditation, it is said you don't even need to understand what the mantras are saying. What each word stands for is not important to know, because the energy is not in the meaning. The energy is in the sound. Okay, so even if you're just chanting blindly without knowing what each word says, you still get the benefit. Okay, now, and that is why, because when you do this practice as a whole, when you practice yoga as a whole, there are different things that happen. You chant mantras, there are fire ceremonies. You can do just asanas also, but that is not a complete yoga. Okay, so that is why it's never feel bad about having to chant a mantra or behaving a certain way, because it is a culture that comes from somewhere else. So it is foreign to you. Okay, so if you feel uncomfortable, that is also completely normal. You don't have to do anything. But at the same time, you don't have to also feel that somebody is trying to push their religion on you. Okay, the other word for Hinduism is Sanatan Dharma. Okay, in red I've written. Sanatan means for everyone. And dharma means the righteous path. La shama jist. Okay, la shama jist putul mund. Shama jist, like the right path, the righteous path. So it is the righteous path because it only tells you to be a good human being. And that is for everyone. Okay, no matter your religion. You don't have to get out of your religion to start practicing yoga or Hinduism or whatever for that matter. Okay. Now in Krishna, in the second chapter, when he's talking to Arjun, he says, Samatvam yoguchyate. According to Krishna, having a balanced state of mind is so honorable and so important that if you can, no matter what kind of situation, keep a balanced state of mind, you are in yoga. Doesn't matter whether you can twist or not, you can do a headstand, a handstand, not important at all. Okay, if you do regular asana practice, not important. But if you can keep a balanced state of mind, no matter what is happening around you, whether very joyful or something really sad, but if you do not lose your perspective of life, if you do not lose your calmness of the mind, you are in yoga. Okay, samatvam yog uchyate. A balanced state of mind is yoga. Okay, so these were the three definitions that I feel define actually what is yoga. So now you see, yoga is everything to do with the mind. We work on a physical body. Asanas are very important. Okay, but the aim of asanas, the aim of postures, is also to calm the mind. Okay, the aim of yoga is always spirituality. If you're doing yoga for any other reason, whether it is to lose weight, whether it is to, I don't know, become flexible, whatever be your reason, if that is your only reason, then you're not doing yoga. Okay? Because the aim of yoga is spirituality. We do postures, and postures, yes, they also work on your subtle body for a, you cannot compare yoga asanas to just physical exercises, because postures also work on your physical body. But to a great length, we are doing asanas to become stronger and more flexible so that we can stay in a state of meditation, either this way or in lotus pose. You can stay in that pose for hours on end to meditate. And you can only do that if you're strong, both mentally and physically. You can only do that if you're flexible, because what is not flexible breaks. Okay, so only if you, so you, that's why you need postures to become strong, to become more flexible, okay, to calm the mind, because then you can sit for hours doing meditation. So the aim of yoga is only that. Now, what are the types of yoga? They are called the types of yoga, but they're more like the paths of yoga. Okay, so you can choose any path, but all paths at the end, they merge. You can start from one of these paths that, okay, this is my path. Let me just start on this. But after a while, I feel each path individually is incomplete. Okay, it needs to merge at some point for it to become a complete yoga practice. So the first is Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is the yoga of devotion. Okay, the
devotion.
Devotion. It's the yoga of the heart. What is devotion in French? Devotion? So it's the yoga of the heart. Now, Bhakti Yoga doesn't use any intelligence. You don't need your brain at all. You don't need to figure out what is happening, what am I doing. Bhakti Yoga only works from the heart. It opens up your heart chakra. Okay, it is the yoga where you can, where you just believe in God. Okay, all forms of prayers, all forms of singing to the divine, whether it's happening in churches or in temples or wherever, when you are just worshipping a God that you can't even see, Because there is no logic to it. Somebody will ask you, but where is your God? I don't even see God. That's when the heart is speaking. Okay? That is bhakti yoga. So people who spend all the time in singing and chanting and praying to the divine energy is bhakti yoga. This energy, because it is based on devotion and faith, it opens up your heart. Okay? The second is karma yoga, yoga of service. Karma, the word karma means action. It has no other meaning. It doesn't mean punishment or anything the way it has been distorted now in the modern world. Karma only means action. So karma yoga is the yoga of service, where you use your, or the, you can say the yoga of your hands, where you use your physical body basically to serve others. Whenever you are doing a service where you don't expect anything in return, that is karma yoga. Now, karma yoga helps you to completely break down your ego. Okay, if you think you're better than others, if you think you have an ego problem, okay, go in service of others. And this will help you break down the ego. People who work in hospice, for example, okay, where there a lot of people are sick, a lot of people are dying, or very old people. And even if they are paid anything, okay, even if they get a salary or whatever, I feel that kind of a job requires so much strength of the heart and the mind. Like, it's such a huge service, because sometimes even your families are incapable of caring for you. And in the hospice, people are taking, people volunteer also in hospice, where you're serving people right in the last moments of their life. Okay, that is a very good karma yoga. In yoga schools, normally it involves that you're working, you're part of the yoga that's happening. You're part of the center, you're gardening, you're cleaning, you know, anything, any way that you can help, cleaning dishes, that considered karma yoga. Anywhere where you are just in service of others without expecting anything in return is karma yoga. Have you seen the movie Karate Kid? But the new one, yeah. Jackie Chan.
I know, I saw the series.
No, not the series. No, no.
Bruce Willis?
Will Smith. Smith. Yes.
Ah, yes.
Have you seen that? Yeah. So, if you haven't, you should go back and watch that movie. It's a very good movie. So this little boy is American and he has recently moved to China in the movie. Okay, Will Smith's son. And there's a lot of bullying that happens in school. And it's not bullying just verbal. He gets beaten up in school a lot by other young Chinese boys. And he realizes all these boys, they learn Kung Fu. So he wants to learn Kung Fu and he finds Jackie Chan. So Jackie Chan works in their building, okay? He works as a plumber, electrician and everything. But Jackie Chan is also a Kung Fu master. And so he requests Jackie Chan, please teach me Kung Fu. Now, because Jackie Chan also works in the building, he has seen this boy in his day-to-day life, like how this boy behaves and what does he do. So when he starts teaching this boy Kung Fu for the first few weeks and a long time, okay, not just 2-3 days, like few weeks, all this boy does in the class, he enters the class, he removes his jacket, throws it on the floor, picks it up and hangs it on a stand. And he does this every day. Jackie Chan makes him do only that. You enter, you remove your jacket, you throw it on the floor, you pick it up, you hang it. You enter. And for hours. So if he's going for a class for 2 hours, he's doing only this the entire time. And he does this for weeks. Until one day, again, this boy gets beaten up in school. And he comes crying to Jackie Chan and he says, like, do you even know any Kung Fu? What are you teaching me? You're just wasting my time. And he's really sad and crying that he wants to learn Kung Fu and all he's learning is how to hang his jacket. But what has changed in all this time, which this little boy doesn't realize, because according to him, he's just wasting his time. What has changed is now every time he goes home, earlier he would enter his house, remove his jacket, throw it on the floor for his mother to pick up, then kick his shoes, sit in front of the TV, eat his food, leave the plates, get up and go away. But now since these Kung Fu classes, what has changed is every time he enters his house, he removes his jacket and hangs it. He puts his shoes nicely into place. He's doing all his work on his own. And all these changes have started coming in his life, which he doesn't notice. According to him, he's just wasting time. He hasn't learned any Kung Fu. But his life has started changing. He's already more disciplined and organized in his life. So this is what happens with karma yoga. Karma yoga changes your life without you noticing it. You think, oh, I'm only in service of others. Oh, I'm only cleaning toilets. What is happening? But you realize you're becoming a better person. Okay? This is the magic of karma yoga. When you don't expect anything in return, karma yoga changes you. So this is what Jackie Chan did for this little boy. And from here onwards, Jackie Chan starts teaching him kung fu. He thinks, okay, now you're ready for kung fu. There's a school in India called the Bihar School of Yoga. So when you go to this Bihar School of Yoga, for the first 1 month, they don't let you practice any asanas. They only make you do karma yoga. And the karma yoga over there is just cleaning. You're cleaning the yoga shalas, you're cleaning the public toilets and everything. And a lot of people leave and go also, obviously. But imagine 30 days of not doing anything, just cleaning, cleaning, cleaning. And then apparently your heart changes and you become a better person. And then you're ready for yoga. Yeah. So that is karma yoga. Then Raja Yoga. Raja Yoga means the royal path. Raj means royal. Okay, Lashma royal. Now, everything that we are doing, where you study philosophy, where you practice postures as well, we chant mantras, like we've taken the luxury of time to really understand the path of yoga, postures, philosophy, everything, read books, listen to masters. All this is Raja Yoga. So what we are doing, the Hatha Yoga practice, okay, Hat. So Hat means force, okay. All people, a lot of time ask the difference between yoga practices. The only difference between different styles of yoga, and there are only different styles of yoga, is the teacher who was behind the practice, okay. Otherwise, all postural yoga, all asanas, it doesn't matter which school it comes from, is Hat Yoga. Hat means force. So the yoga of force or the yoga of strength, that is asanas. So all yogas are Hatha Yoga. Now, depending on the teacher, like BKS Iyengar, he started Iyengar Yoga. Pathabi Jua, he started Ashtanga Yoga. Some other teachers started Vinyasa Yoga. Okay, like that, there are different names. But they are all Hatha Yoga. What we do is traditional yoga. But any yoga is Hatha Yoga. Okay, they're just, the name, it depends on the teacher who started the lineage, who gave a certain sequence and called it their style of yoga. Hot yoga is just you increase the temperature of the room, but you will see if you practice different types of yoga, all the postures are the same. Okay, it's just a different way of doing them. If you're doing asanas without philosophy, asanas will not take you much ahead than just strength and flexibility. You need to bring understanding of the philosophy into your life for asanas also to start working deeper. Because then asanas obviously work at a subtle level. But you will never understand that if you do not have an understanding of the philosophy. Yeah, that was Raja Yoga. Then Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is the yoga of intellect. The yoga where you use your brain. So this is the yoga where people use their intellect to actually decipher what is life. Okay. With Bhakti Yoga, you were just using your heart. You were just trusting the universe to take care of you. Karma Yoga is you in service of others, hoping it will change your life. But Jnana Yoga, you're using your brain. So you read a lot of books, trying to understand what is happening. You listen to old masters, try to figure out whatever they are saying, what is the meaning behind it. But basically using a lot of intellect and deciphering the functions of the universe and what is life, those intellectual questions, okay? Now that is Jnana Yoga. Now why I say that you can start from anywhere, but at some point the paths should merge, because just one will not lead you to the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal where you want to find out all the answers cannot happen with just one path. Bhakti Yoga is praying, okay? There are a lot of religious people who think they are doing yoga. Okay, a lot of religious people in all kinds of religions who pray, who sing, who chant, but are not usually the best of human beings. Okay, there's no guarantee that because you pray or you believe in God makes you a good human being. Karma Yoga, there are a lot of people in service of others. But if you do not have time to take care of yourself, your Karma Yoga might also have to end at some point. Okay, Raja Yoga, though it consists of everything, but if you remove the service from your Raja Yoga, if you remove Bhakti Yoga from your Raja Yoga, or if you remove questioning, which is part of the Jnana Yoga, if you just blindly trust everything that you're being said, your Raja Yoga will also be incomplete. And Jnana Yoga, just using your brain and thinking you're better than others, okay, is just an ego boost. Okay, that, oh, I could read so many books. Oh, I've heard so many people talk. There are a lot of people like that also. I've read books. I've traveled the world. I've done this. Okay, but if that is only giving you an ego boost and not really taking you on the path of yoga, that Jnana Yoga is also incomplete. So at some point, you can start from wherever you want, but all paths should merge. And asanas are very important, even if they are not part of Bhakti Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga, because they help you take care of your physical body. In this world, in the physical world, your body is very important. Because when you are sick, when you are in bed, you cannot do anything. You cannot be of help to anyone. You don't even want to take care of your own kids, your husband, your partner, whatever. Okay, you just want to be in bed. And that life serves no purpose. You cannot meditate. You cannot find out what is wrong with your life. That is, being sick is another way to just go into depression. Okay, so you have to take care of your physical body. So asanas are very important. But it's not the only thing. Okay, Patanjali tells us that there are 8 steps to follow to reach the final destination. Okay, the final destination is Samadhi. Samadhi is Nirvana, Moksha, whatever you know, that is Samadhi. You don't have to die to achieve Samadhi. Okay, it's Nirvana, Moksha, it doesn't happen just at death. You can reach that state when you go deeper into the practice of yoga, deeper into meditation. You might reach a state where you realize, oh, I know the functionings of the universe. I know why I am here. I know how it all works out. So Patanjali gives us an 8-fold path. Okay, this is also called Ashtanga Yoga. It's not the same Ashtanga Yoga where you do the postures. Ashtang means 8, Asht means 8, and Ang means parts, like body parts. So these are 8 parts of yoga. Livit Mom Di Yoga. Okay, Mom Kamle Mom Di Wat Ko. Now, there might be other parts, but what Patanjali is telling us that this is the righteous path. This is a just path. This is a certain path that if you walk on this path in this way, the sequence being very important, there is no way that you will not reach Samadhi. Okay? There is no way that you can fall off the wagon. There might be other paths, but they are not certain. It's not certain that you will reach. You might fall off the wagon. Okay? So with this path, there is no other way but to reach the final destination. He starts with yamas. Yamas are the moral codes of your life, the moral values that we all must have to be called a yoga practitioner. So Patanjali gives a lot of importance to moral values. Okay? There is a certain way all human beings must behave, and that is important according to Patanjali. Then there are niyamas. Niyamas are rules. Certain rules that we must all follow to be a good human being. And then Patanjali says, if you follow these yamas and niyamas, should you begin with asanas? Asanas are your yoga postures. Now, according to Patanjali, without yamas and niyamas, we are not even good enough to do postures. And why does he say that? Because unless you do the yamas and niyamas, you will not understand the real benefit of the postures, of the asanas. Because there are many gymnasts, there are many contortionists who work in circuses, okay, who can do all the twists and turning, who can stand upside down and everything that you see even yoga practitioners doing. But they are not yogis. To be a yogi, you need a certain depth of personality. And that depth of personality comes from the yamas and the niyamas. And then when the asanas work on your subtle body, because asanas also work on the subtle body, not just your physical body, they will not cause you any harm. Because what happens is, any kind of energetic practice that you do, if you are not ready for it, if you are not ready for it mentally, if you do not lead a certain way of lifestyle, a clean lifestyle, you might cause yourself more harm than good. So Patanjali says you have to do yamas and niyamas and only then get into asanas. And then once you start doing the asanas, should you do your pranayama? Now pranayama are breathing practices. So now you see we're getting deeper and deeper into it. So with yamas and niyamas, you were taking care just of your lifestyle. Then with asanas, you start working on the physical body and trying to get deeper inside and work on the energetic body or the subtle body. And then with pranayama, you go even deeper. With pranayama, you're only working with energies. Okay, like today, this morning we were discussing, it helps you balance the energy in your body or helps you oxygenate the brain. So you say we go deeper beyond the body. Now, according to Patanjali, you should have a certain level in your asana practice to begin with your pranayama. Now, the problem is when you go to yoga studios to practice these days, especially, a lot of teachers want to teach pranayama. Okay, even if it's just a 2-hour practice or a 1-hour practice, they want to teach you pranayama because it's also about showing that we know. Okay, it's also about the ego that we talk about. Also, this uncertainty. You will think I'm not a good teacher if I do not teach you pranayama. Okay, so we all want to teach pranayama. And even students want to learn, okay, I want to do yoga, maybe I should do breathing exercises, you need to do something else. But what happens is, because with pranayama, you're working on the subtle energies of the body. If you're not ready for pranayama, you can cause more harm than good. It can alter your state of being from within. You will not know. It's not today, you'll feel bad tomorrow, but surely your energy starts changing slowly. Okay, that's what Patanjali says. You should have a namas, a certain kind of lifestyle. You should have niyamas. Your life should be disciplined. Niyamas are rules. You should have a regular asana practice and then start your pranayam. Now, the pranayam which we will do here in the next 3 days will be at a very basic level. Okay, we will not go very deep into pranayam because, again, in a group class, everyone needs to be at the same level. We should all have a certain kind of lifestyle to go deeper and start playing with the energies in our body. Okay, that's why there will not be a lot of retention. There will be a lot of other practices that come with pranayama that will not happen. So don't worry about the little breathing that we do, inhale, exhale and all that. That is not going to cause you any harm. Okay, so that you can do without any worry. And then when you do your pranayama, starts pratyahara. Pratyahara is turning within, to look within. So the first 4 are called the external practices. And then from the 5th point onwards, the practice turns inwards. When you can finally do your asanas and pranayams, are you ready to start looking within, to what's happening within you? Because until then, you are just distracted by whatever is happening around you. There are too many distractions to start turning within. With this practice, you've started bringing a change in yourself. The first 4 steps are changing you. And then you're ready to turn within, to look within. Dharana. And that's when dharana becomes easy. Dharana is concentration. When you can turn within, can you concentrate? If you are distracted by your external surroundings, it's difficult to concentrate on anything. It's only when you turn within, can you concentrate. And when dharana comes easily, then becomes dhyan. Concentration becomes your meditation. You can stay concentrated on something for a long period of time and you can start meditating. Dhyan is meditation. And only when you meditate will you reach samadhi or enlightenment. When you will find the answers to all your questions. It will happen only in meditation. There is no other shortcut. Okay. So this is the Eightfold Path. Only when you can concentrate can you meditate. So what we are trying to do here these days, when we take an object, either it is your breath, okay, or it's a mantra, whatever you are concentrating, we use an object to concentrate on. Because right now the mind is full of thoughts. Okay, so to reduce those thoughts, we choose an object. And the numerous thoughts, they become one thought. When you can concentrate on that one thought, whether it is your breath or a mantra or something else, whatever you use, then it's easier to drop that one thought. Because meditation is where there are no thoughts, where the mind becomes empty. That is when meditation happens. But to reach there, you need to be able to concentrate. Okay? So right now, we choose an object where you can concentrate on the breath. If it's difficult to concentrate on the breath, you can count your breath. Okay? Or today, we started with the belly. It is because it's a large surface, it's easy to concentrate on the belly. Okay? It helps you ground faster. It actually gives you, if you can concentrate for a long time, it helps you feel grounded, concentrating on the belly. Okay? With your breath. So we use objects right now because we're only trying to concentrate. It's difficult at this point to drop all thought and become empty. But it comes. It comes with practice. Okay. It's not something that is unattainable. It will happen with practice. Okay. Now let's see what are these yamas and niyamas that are so important that Patanjali says without that, we should not even start our asana practice. So the first yama, So yamas are your moral values, like kod, moho. The first is ahimsa. Ahimsa means non-violence. So non-violence. So what, actually another thing that you will see, especially with the yamas, these are all things that our parents, grandparents, whoever, any elderly person when we were kids told us. It's just that when we grow up, we try to find reasons to not follow them. We have excuses. Okay. So when we are kids, everything is black and white, the good or the bad. All kids know what is good and what is bad. Okay, even babies know that when they are born. And then as we start to grow up, we say, oh no, there's nothing black and white. It's all shades of gray. Patanjali is telling you there are no shades of gray. It's all black and white. Okay, but you use your intellect always to define what is true for you. Okay, you use your brain. There are no rules. Nobody's sitting there and judging. Okay, there is no God in a white robe, or goddess for that matter, who is sitting and taking a note of what good you're doing, what bad you're doing. Okay, life doesn't function that way. Those are concepts that religion has created to keep us in control. Because if religion would tell you that you are God yourself, you will become too powerful. You will realize that you have the strength to change your own life. Okay, you don't have to pray to somebody externally. And when you realize you can change your own life, you can do whatever you want. Now, Patanjali is giving us a moral codes to be a good human being. That's all. Okay? Ahimsa. Ahimsa is non-violence. Non-violence in whatever form you want to define it. So, the basic we all understand. You cannot kill someone. Okay? Killing is too far-fetched. You cannot even hurt someone. Do not hurt anyone physically. Okay? That is ahimsa. Do not beat a dog on the street. Do not throw stones at animals. We all teach our kids this, okay? We all know this. Like sometimes you see them doing at beaches, they're trying to catch fish and then leave a fish again. And it's apparently a game. Parents also encourage it. They buy nets. I don't understand that game at all because I just feel that's so violent, okay? That is violence, okay? You're disturbing a fish and then you're putting it back, or you're playing. Kids even bring it outside and play with the fish on the sand where it dies. So this is what we understand at any level, okay? We understand this is violence. Then you try to bring it deeper into your life. Okay, you should not hurt anyone, even with your words. Do not say something to someone that will hurt them, that will cause them pain. Okay, but you define at your own level, and with your own intellect, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, you define how deep that level is. You should not even hurt anyone with your thoughts. Because what happens when you want bad for others is you're reducing your own vibrations, okay? Because you are the creator, okay? You are the manifester of your own life. Whatever you are attracting in your life is your own doing. If you think your life is very negative, if you think you don't have good people in your life, then you should also question yourself that what have you done to attract that in your life, okay? And being violent, thinking bad for others, speaking bad for others, gossiping behind people, all this reduces your own vibrations. It's not because there's somebody sitting up there taking a note and he will punish you. Okay? That is just the concept of karma, which is very distorted. That is not karma, just means action. Your action will have a result. That's all. But it's not going to come back in the form of punishment. It's just going to come back equally because life is meant to learn lessons. We have come to this earth school. We've only taken birth over here to learn lessons and to graduate spiritually, okay, to advance spiritually. So all these things, if you don't follow these moral codes, you're basically just reducing your own vibrations. And the game of life, if you know how to play the game of life, you will know it is only about increasing your own vibrations, increasing the frequency at which you vibrate. If you vibrate at a high frequency, negative people cannot affect you. Negative events cannot affect you. You can only attract what you are the frequency of. If you're vibrating at a high frequency, you will only attract everything that's in that frequency. If you're vibrating at a low frequency, higher frequencies, you will not even see them. They will pass by you. Okay? Because your frequency is different. So you define what is non-violence for you. Based on wherever you are in your spiritual journey, there is no guideline, there is no book that will tell you this is what is non-violence. The basics we understand: don't kill anyone, don't hurt anyone physically, don't make people bleed, don't make animals bleed. Okay? But after that, as per what is right for you.
So this implies vegetarianism?
It does not imply vegetarianism because plants also have a soul. It's a completely different topic. But everything in universe has a conscience. Everything. We all are part of the same conscience. Everything has a soul. Plants also has been proved scientifically that they talk to each other. Through the roots of plants, you know, they pass messages to each other. If you go and cut a tree in a forest, immediately they'll pass chemicals to all the other trees around you, warning them that there is danger. Okay? The same thing happens during a wildfire. It doesn't say you have to be a vegetarian. Okay? Because there are a lot of people who eat meat these days, but they buy it from ethical farms, what are called ethical farms, where you know the animal grew up with love and everything, and it's killed ethically. It's not a mass market. It's not passed through a chain, and you don't have to eat meat 3 times a day, 7 days a week, you know. And that's why the factories of meat came, because we all decided we need to eat meat every meal of the day and every day of the week. And that's when all the whole industrialization of meat happened. It doesn't tell you to be vegetarian. But if that is what ahimsa means for you, then there is no harm. Okay. But it is not a law. Like even Ayurveda is not a vegetarian science. Ayurveda even tells meat eaters what to eat and what not to eat.
Ayurveda, right?
Yeah. According to your body type, if you should be eating meat or you should not be eating meat, because it's not a vegetarian science. Also depends where do you come from. Today, okay, it's available everywhere. But 100 years ago, if you're living in Otsawa, you were probably just raised on milk, cheese and meat. It's today that we can get everything. But at the same time, because we are not living 100 years ago, we are living in today's world, you should also be using all the amenities that are available to you today. If you live in Greenland and you say, I want to eat only vegetables every day, then you're not making sense, okay? Then, I mean, to get vegetables, already vegetables traveling that far, I don't know what nutrition will be left in the vegetable. And if you're not making, because nature is providing you with food, okay? There is no God sitting and saying you're doing an evil task. If it's not mass marketed, if it's not a factory, it's all good. You have to feed yourself. Ahimsa is also for you. Non-violence is also towards you. You cannot kill yourself. At the same time, being vegetarian doesn't mean you're not getting enough nutrients. If you believe I have to become a vegetarian because I have to be non-violent, but at the same time, there is always a tiny thought, oh no, I'm not getting enough nutrition. Oh, I'm missing these vitamins. I'm missing so much protein. Then your body will believe that you're missing out. And then your lifestyle will not work on you. And that is what happens with a lot of people. They become, in the fashion of becoming vegetarian or vegan or whatever, they, as part of the fashionable lifestyle, they change it. But they keep believing, okay, no, this might not work. And 5 years down the line, you say, at 5 years ago, they were telling everybody in the world, oh, all of you should be vegan, you should not eat milk and this and that. 5 years down the line, the same people, again, same people on social media will tell you, no, you should eat like your ancestors. Now it's a new thing. And these were the same people who 5 years ago were vegan. Vegan completely. So you go from being a meat eater to being vegan, where you've left everything. You left dairy, you left honey also and everything. You left it all and you decided I'm going to be vegan for the animals. And then because you never believed in it, you were only doing it for a social cause. Okay. Now suddenly you feel your body doesn't get enough. So you go completely the other way. And then you preach that also. That is also the problem of social media, that everybody thinks they can tell others how to live. Okay. And they don't even realize that if you were wrong 5 years ago, maybe you are wrong again now. Like, where does that confidence come from? So Patanjali is not telling you how to live your life. He's giving you a moral code. Based on your intellect, you go deeper into it. Okay. Living in Greenland or living in Alaska, if you want to eat vegetables every day, that might not work out. Okay. But living in a country, like where we are right now, where everything is available, or living in one of the tropical countries. Like today, if I sit here and say, I want to eat like my ancestors, it's possible. Okay, but somebody who's born and brought up here wants to eat like their ancestors 800, 200 years ago, might be difficult. Because also, it's not the same lifestyle. Life was very difficult at that time. It was a lot more physical. So consuming that amount of dairy, that amount of meat, that amount of bread, might not work in today's lifestyle. So there is no right way, wrong way. Decide based on where you are on your journey. Okay? Nothing is right or wrong unless you believe it to be so. Okay? Next is Satya. Satya means honesty. Always say the truth. Again, something your parents told you when you were kids. Because to hide one lie, you need to tell 100 lies. And then you're building a web of lies and you don't know how to come out of it. You're just entangled in lies. So you're complicating your own life. Another reason why Patanjali is giving us these guidelines is because the whole game is the game of the mind. Okay? So he's trying to uncomplicate our life. When your life is complicated, okay, when you've told lies or you've done something else and or let's say you're a violent person, imagine the thoughts that you might be having. They're not calm and good thoughts. Okay, if you are, let's say you are deeply entangled into lies, okay, then you're so deep into lies that you're always worried somebody might catch your lie. Imagine your thoughts, okay? You're just always stressed about your lies. So Patanjali has also given us this path so that you can keep your life uncomplicated. Lead a simple life. It helps you live a simple life. So your brain is calmer. Your mind is calmer. Your life is easier to live. And life should be easy. The only aim of life is to be happy. Okay, life should be smooth and free-flowing. If any teacher, any guru, any master tells you, oh, life is supposed to be very serious, life is serious business, you should take life seriously, then they are just projecting their own insecurities, their own difficult life onto you. Life, you're meant to have fun. You're supposed to live like kids do. Kids up till the age of 3 years old, they don't care about anything. They wake up in the morning, they already want to run out. They're so happy to wake up. You know, life should be like that. We should be like that. Waking up in the morning, excited for the day. And if it's not like that, that means we've complicated our life. Okay, life should be uncomplicated, it should be fun, it should be joyful. And then when you're so busy trying to make your life joyful, just raising your vibrations and try to keep yourself away from negative people, negative events, negative thoughts, then you don't have time for anyone around you to basically try to change anyone around you, to tell, oh, you should live your life this way, you should do this. You don't have time. You're so busy just making your own life amazing. Okay. And that's why happy people are easier to be around also. We all want to be around with happier people because they don't care. Like kids, the day they want something, they wait for the parents to be in a good mood. Okay, no, I can ask mama tomorrow, she'll be in a good mood. And you know, the mother will immediately say yes when she's in a good mood. Because when you're in a good mood, you are an easy person. It's easier to get things out of you because you're happy, you want others to be happy. And the same thing works the other way. If you're miserable, you will bring misery on others. You will want others to be miserable. Even if it's not consciously that you want others to be sad, your energy is such that even others become miserable and sad around you. Okay? So the idea of life is to just be happy and find ways to be happy. If somebody doesn't understand why you need to do this thing to be happy, it's okay. They have their own life to live. You live your own in your own way. Okay, as kids, yes, we had to listen to our parents all the time. We had to listen to other grown-ups because they were taking care of us. Once you're a grown-up, do what makes you happy. And to do what makes you happy, he's giving us a moral code. It should not be that I want to do drugs to be happy. Okay, now over here, the sequence is very important. Okay, satya is the truth. Also, live in the truth. What is true for you? What does that mean for you? Because only when you are your true self can you really be happy. If you're trying to be someone else, you will not be happy. You might be miserable. Okay, because that is not the real you. So satya also means living your own true version, the truest version of yourself. And that is another way of raising your vibration. If you are your truest form, your truest self, your vibrations will anyway be high because you're not busy in comparison with others. You're not worried what others are thinking about me. Okay, you're just happy just being your own self. So that's why God has made you the perfect way that he could. He's made you in his own version, okay, in his own form. He's given a part of himself to you. That's why you're the creator of your own life. So what can be wrong with you? Nothing is wrong with any of us. Okay, if you're weird in your own way, who decided you're weird? It's the others who are not like you. Okay, we are all different and take pride in being different. Be your own truest form, and that is satya. Okay, now if your truth hurts somebody else, you can lie. Your truth hurts somebody else, you can lie, because ahimsa always stays on top. But your truth, in the sense when it's a white lie, you know this concept of white lies, a truth that will not bring any harm to anyone. Okay.
You can also just say nothing at all.
You can also say nothing at all. But like giving you an example, if I ask you, do you like what I'm wearing? Okay. Now, you might not like what I'm wearing, but it doesn't change your life in any way to say you love what I'm wearing. Okay. But for me, it changes everything. If you say, I don't like at all what you're wearing, you look funny, I would think, okay, I already spent 2 hours in these clothes. Okay. Imagine the whole world was thinking I look funny. And I've still been wearing. So you see, my entire thought process immediately brings my entire morale down. But if you say, you look nice, I already feel confident in myself. You will also see it in my behavior suddenly that you say, you look so nice today. And then I have the confidence to carry on like that for the rest of the day. Okay. It did not change your life in any way. There was no harm done to anything. And like this, a lot of events happen in our day-to-day life when sometimes saying the truth is not important, is not changing you. Like for kids, when kids bring paintings to us, we say, so amazing. And we put them up everywhere. Bunwa likes to put it in his bedroom, also on the walls everywhere. Even though they're ugly, okay? You still say, wow, what an amazing job. But you're doing it for others, somebody else to feel good. It raises their confidence. It raises their vibrations. The third is asteya. Asteya is non-stealing. Okay, so this also everyone understands. Don't steal. If something doesn't belong to you, do not take it. But then can you take it deeper into your life? Don't steal people of their time, let's say. If you told somebody, I will be there at 6 o'clock, be there at 6 o'clock. If you're going to be late, you tell them, inform them in advance. Don't steal time out of their life. Don't take credit for other people's work. It can happen in, it happens usually in offices, in corporate environments. Okay, somebody does the work, someone else takes the credit. The competition spirit, basically. You can also say you don't steal anybody else's energy. In the sense, if you're feeling miserable, don't project it onto others. Don't take credit for other people's work. Don't steal them, rob them of their time. What else? How else can you steal things? Basically, you get the idea. Okay, then you take it deeper and deeper into your life and see how better you can be a human being. So the fourth is brahmacharya. Okay, so brahmacharya is celibacy.
Yes.
Celibacy. Now, when Patanjali used to teach yoga about 5,000 years ago, yoga was mostly learnt by young students, okay, girls and boys of a young age from the age of 7 onwards. Yoga was mostly practiced by people who had finished their household responsibilities. When we say household responsibilities, then you've... You finish the responsibilities towards your partner, your wife, husband, whoever. Your kids are all grown up. They've left the house. And now you're free to get into spiritual practice without causing any harm to anyone. Because today you cannot say, I'm going to leave everything and just be in my spiritual practice. That's not why we are doing yoga. We are doing yoga so that we do better out there. Okay? But when you do yoga at the age of 60, 65, let's say, it is for your own self, just your own personal practice. So during the time of Patanjali, yoga was mostly for young people and older people. They were the ones who were not householders like us. Okay, people who have jobs to go to, partners, kids, whatever. It was easy to be a celibate. Okay, to be celibate. The idea of celibacy is that this energy is a very powerful energy. Okay, sexual energy is a very powerful energy. Now, we think of sexual energy only in terms of pleasure and desire. Okay, but now think of it from the spiritual point of view. Sexual energy is so powerful that it can create life. Okay, it has the power to create new life. That is how powerful this energy is. So Patanjali is saying it cannot be wasted. Now, when this energy doesn't go from, you don't lose this energy from down, it mounts up. It climbs. It climbs your 7 chakras, go right up till the top. It's easier to meditate and people are even stronger physically. So it helps you in spiritual growth when you don't lose it from down. And you might have noticed even during, you know, World Cups and all that, players, whether no, doesn't matter what kind of game, they're not allowed to travel with their wives and girlfriends and all because they're not allowed to use this, lose this energy. Because it builds the aggression and they're stronger and they'll play better. So it works the same way in spirituality. When you keep this energy and you meditate, it helps you go to the higher levels easier. Now, how can we bring brahmacharya into our lives? Because it is a very powerful energy, number one. It is not an energy that should be just shared with, like you say in French, n'importe qui. Okay? You cannot share this energy with anyone. So obviously your one night stands are out of the question. Okay, when you don't know anyone and you go sleep with that someone. Okay, that is completely breaking down your energy. It's completely ruining your vibration. You don't know who this person was. You don't know their background. You don't know where they come from. And you go sleep with them. Now, just if somebody enters a room, okay, you might have seen, sometimes some person enters the room and suddenly everyone is happy. You say, oh wow, what a bright light has entered. Okay, this person brought so much joy with them. Suddenly same, a miserable person walks in, or somebody you don't like walks in, and you feel, oh, they've sucked the energy out of the room. Everyone suddenly starts feeling a bit low. So they suddenly start quarreling, or people get angry, or they get upset, you know, just with one person walking into the room. So energy, even when you don't see it, is very tangible. You can feel it. Okay. If we touch each other, there is an exchange of energy. And that is why in a lot of Eastern cultures, there is no bees and hugging and all that. It's always namaste. Even India does this, Thailand does this, Japan also, you're just bowing down. Ancient China was the same. There was no culture of touching each other. And it was not because, oh, you are so bad, or your energy is so bad, save me from it. It's not that. It's that we don't need this exchange of energy. Now, today, a lot of us don't feel good in our bodies, and we are questioning, what is wrong with me? I eat well, I exercise. Why do I still not feel good? It's because our bodies are storing a lot of information. This energy exchange that happens in a day with so many people all the time. And our bodies don't know what to do with it. Don't know what to do with all this information that is just there within us. Okay, all this entire exchange of energy. Now think, just being around someone is an energy exchange. Touching somebody is an energy exchange. So what is happening when you're sleeping with someone and you don't even know this person? Okay, imagine, first of all, a sexual act is a very powerful exchange of energy. And when you understand it from a spiritual point of view, you will yourself not want to just sleep with anyone. You will want the best person for yourself. That's why a lot of religions used to say, save yourself for marriage. They made it like a rule. It's not a rule, but it should be a spiritual guideline. You know, save yourself for the best one out there, because it's a very powerful exchange of energy. It will help you keep your own vibrations safe. Now, this is where it answers again your question of stealing somebody's partner. So not to have multiple partners. If you are with someone, stay with that one person. Okay, doesn't mean you stay with an abusive partner. That's not what anyone is saying, because ahimsa always stays on top. Okay, that's not what the point is. But again, if you are cheating on your partner, there is violence involved, there are lies involved, there is stealing involved. So already all that goes wrong, and then obviously brahmacharya, celibacy, is also down the drain. Okay, so nothing is happening over there. So do not cheat on your partners. Don't have multiple partners. Okay, basically it's your own energy. Keep it protected. That's all the guideline is. Not because God says you are a bad person. Okay, not because of that. Those are just guidelines created by religion to control you. Nothing like that will happen, because you're creating your own life. At every point, you're manifesting your own life. If you're not with good people, you are ruining your own vibrations. Okay. And so for us people in our day-to-day life, this is how we bring brahmacharya into our life. We do not share any form of energy, just free-flowingly with people we don't know. Then is aparigraha. Aparigraha is non-accumulation or non-hoarding. So like we did during COVID, everybody thought there are not going to be enough toilet paper. So we brought all the toilet papers from the supermarket home, and we did not think about others who didn't have even one. Okay, or a lot of pasta was going away. So this is what is parigraha. Parigraha is non-hoarding. You don't hoard. You always live in the spirit of brotherhood, always in the spirit of sharing. Okay, to share whatever you have. Okay, do not just try to, and this also works for non-attachment. You don't get attached to things so much that they steal your peace of mind. Like if you break your watch today, okay, yes, it was an expensive watch. Okay, yes, it was very important to you. You can be sad for a minute, but you cannot be carrying that emotion with you all the time, just thinking, oh no, I lost my watch. And then you start questioning who owned whom. Like, did you own the watch, or the watch owns you? Okay, because the watch broke, and with that, it took away your peace of mind. You can be sad about it. You cannot lose your peace of mind. So the same thing. You can like something, but you cannot take all of it for yourself and not think about others. Non-hoarding. Always be in the spirit of sharing. Now you see, whether it's ahimsa, it's satya, it's asteya, it's brahmacharya, parigraha, it's only telling you to keep your life uncomplicated. Okay, do not have too much of anything. Why do you need too many things in your house? Why do you need too many clothes? Okay, it's just complicated. You're just complicating your life. Same thing, creates too many thoughts and then your mind is more difficult to manage. Don't spin a web of lies, don't steal, brahmacharya, everything actually basically is just telling you to protect your own energy. Okay, to protect your own mind. So these were the five yamas, the moral codes. But you follow them based on your own intellect, your own power of discernment. You decide what works for you. Okay. And then niyamas. Niyamas are rules, basic rules of life. Nothing too complicated, nothing too serious. But what we should all follow. The first is soch. Soch is cleanliness. Proprete. That pop. So you wake up in the morning, you go to toilet, you brush your teeth, you take a shower, okay? Then you clean your house, you keep your surroundings clean, you wear clean clothes. Basically, stay clean. Because if your environment is clean, the energy will also be clean. Okay, a lot of people these days do not want to take showers daily because they're trying to save the planet. And we've had people like that here also who've asked us, okay, I take a shower once in 3 days. The planet is a reflection of us. Okay, the planet reflects us. Today, if you see, the planet is not in a good state, wars all around us. It is just a reflection of what is happening within us. What happens within us, we create it on the outside. Okay, take care of yourself, the planet will be saved on its own. Okay, water has a very powerful energy. It helps you clean your vibrations. It helps you clean your energy. That is why you should shower every day. It helps you remove negative energy. Okay, even if you don't use soap, shower is very good for you. You should go to the toilet every day. If you Google what is constipation, it will tell you if you don't go to the toilet for 4 or 5 days, it's constipation. If you do not go to the toilet, even for 1 day, it is constipation. Your digestive tract, okay, your large intestine, your small intestine is like your second brain. If you're not good here, you cannot be good in the mind. That's why in English, there's a saying also, if somebody's not in a good mood, we ask them, why are you so constipated today? Okay, it comes from there, because if it's not good here, it won't be good here. And then if you're miserable, you will spread misery to everyone around you. That's violence. So go to the toilet every day. There are a lot of yogic practices that tell you how you should be able to clean your digestive tract every day. But the first thing is, if you have problems, you wake up in the morning and drink 2 glasses of warm water in a squatting position. Very simple. Okay, you squat and you drink 2 glasses of warm water, body temperature water. So in summers, it can be around 36, 37 degrees. In winters, it can go up till 39, 40 degrees if it's very cold. And drink 2 glasses of water and then go sit on the toilet, even if you don't feel it. Slowly, your body and your mind start to understand that this is my time to go to the toilet and it will function. You can change your body and mind the way you want. It's not the other way around. Don't feel for the pressure to come. You have to tell your body at every morning at this time, I go to the toilet. Or whenever I drink 2 glasses of water, I need to go to the toilet. But make sure you are cleaning your intestines every day. Especially people like us. 3 meals a day, that means you need to go to the toilet. If you eat 1 meal a day, okay, or if you're regularly fasting, then okay, we can say, okay, your digestive system doesn't function the way it should normally. But if you're eating regularly, you should also go to the toilet regularly. And regularly means at least minimum once a day. This is soch, very simple. Keep yourself clean, keep your surroundings clean. That helps you also to keep your mind clean. Okay, your energy is clean. Then santosh. Santosh is contentment. Contentment doesn't mean that you cannot desire for better things. If you live in a small apartment, it's okay to wish for a big house. It's okay to wish for a better car. It's okay to wish for a job that pays you more. All that is okay. All that is normal. That is the only way we will progress. But the problem is, if to have those things, you're ruining your today. If you say, oh, I will only be happy when I have a bigger house, then there is the problem. If you cannot be grateful for all that you have around you already today, then there is a problem. So contentment is telling us, you be content in whatever you have. You find your joy, you find your gratitude with whatever you've been given. And with that energy, you will be able to attract better, number one, and progress faster. So the idea is not to not desire better things. You can want a luxurious life. Nowhere does it say that spiritual people should not want luxury. There is no law like that. Okay, it's not written in any book that you have to be poor and only then can you be spiritual. No, you can want better things, wish for a better life, but at the same time, do not ruin your today for that. Be happy with what you have. Be grateful for everything that you have. Be content in this and then keep striving for having more. Okay, then tapas. Tapas is not the tapas español. This tapas means to burn. Sabrule. Tapas. The word tapas means sabrule. Okay, to burn. Well, now, what do you burn? You burn your bad habits. You burn your lethargy. You burn laziness. Tapas brings discipline into your life. The first yoga sutra of Patanjali is yoga is a discipline. Atha yoga anushasanam. Yoga is a discipline. So yoga is a very disciplined lifestyle. And that's why Patanjali has given us yamas and niyamas before we start with the asanas. Because only discipline can bring some order into your life. Only then will you understand what is good for you, what is not good for you. Otherwise, when we talk about raising vibrations, making you happy, do what makes you happy. Then you can say, oh, clubbing at night, doing drugs makes me happy. But if you have discipline in your life, you will know that is not what makes you happy. That is when you're trying to run away from emotions, run away from actually facing how you're feeling. Okay, that is not what going to bring you joy. And people do ask, what if I want to go out with my friends at midnight and but I have to sleep? But if you are living a disciplined lifestyle, you will want to go to bed. Because in the morning, you have to wake up and start with something else. That is going to raise your vibrations. Then you will not have this desire of, you will not be pulled in two directions. You will know what is right for you. Because anyway, you are the judge. There is no rule book that this is right, this is wrong. But you will be able to judge better. Okay, so tapas brings discipline into your life. If you cannot wake up early in the morning, it's also because you don't sleep early at night. Okay, it's only if you sleep early at night, your body will not tell you, oh, I need to keep sleeping the whole day long. It will wake up automatically at some point. Okay, so you sleep early, you wake up early. It works hand in hand. But to sleep early, then we have to let go of Netflix maybe. Or we have to let go of social media, not scroll through Instagram, you know, half an hour less, half an hour less. So it's a sacrifice and that brings discipline. Yeah. So this was just an example, but that like that, you bring other disciplines into your life. Like you need to exercise every day, but exercise doesn't mean that you have to wait for 1 hour or 2 hour and only then I can exercise. Just 30 minutes of exercise a day is enough for a healthy body. Okay. Just 10 minutes of meditation a day is enough for a healthy mind before you go to work. You cannot ignore your kids. You cannot ignore your family. You cannot ignore your work to say, oh no, I have my spiritual practice. I have to do my yoga or I have to go to the gym or I have to meditate. You're trying to do everything. We don't have the luxury of that. We're trying to do everything at the same time. But also you cannot ignore your health. You cannot ignore your spiritual growth. So you take out a little time. But to take out that little time, you have to cut time from somewhere else. Okay, so that needs discipline. And that is what is tapas. Swadhyay. Swadhyay is the study of the self. It lets you the swamem. Take out some time every day to sit alone with yourself, where you try to get to know yourself better. Because unless you know yourself better, there will always be someone or something to blame for what is happening in your life. When you can sit with yourself, when you can see what is happening within you, when you can follow your thoughts, you will also see the power that you have to change your own life, to bring a positive change into your own life. There is a saying just outside this room by Rumi. When you go out, you can read it. It says that yesterday I was intelligent and I was trying to change the world. Today I'm wise, so I'm trying to change myself. Because like we already discussed, when you're so busy improving your own life, improving your own vibrations, trying to keep yourself happy, there will be no time in trying to change people around you. Who has the time for that? If somebody comes and tells you a gossip, you're like, no, I don't want to hear about it. I'm too busy raising my vibrations. Gossiping about others, talking bad about others is only going to diminish my vibrations, lower my frequency. If somebody comes and tells you something bad, something negative, you're like, no, I don't care. I'm too busy with my own self. So you live and let live. Let others live their own life the way they want to. You live your own life the way you want to, which is only possible when you take out time to study yourself, to sit with yourself alone every day for a few minutes.
And is that with meditation or?
It is also, yes, it's part of meditation. Yeah. Ishwar Pranidhan. Now, this one is very important. Ishwar means God. Pranidhan means to surrender to God. Now, it is not an easy habit to cultivate. Okay. First of all, if you don't believe in God, you should at least believe in some other form of powerful energy around you. Okay. Now, everything is good. Okay. You can do your ahimsa, you can do your satya, you can do all these things. You can practice yoga every day, you can meditate every day, you can be a very good human being, but something will still happen in your life which will disturb your peace of mind. Because that is the only aim of being on earth. Okay, that we are supposed to learn lessons and grow spiritually. Life is difficult for everybody. Okay, in different ways. Some people are poor, some people are living in palaces and their life is still difficult. A poor man might think, okay, money will solve all his problems. But a rich man has other problems. So we all have different levels of problems because that's the only reason why we have come on earth, to learn lessons and to grow. You might lose somebody you love very dearly. People might die. You might lose a job that you badly need. Okay? You might meet with an accident and be bedridden. Anything can happen in life. Okay? And it is very normal. Bad things happen to all of us. What will save you in this time? Yes, okay, if you've grown spiritually, yes. But still, there are times, if you're not enlightened, there is always something that can completely shake you. At such a time, it is always important to remember that there is always a powerful energy around you. There are always guardian angels around you. There is always somebody or something around you that is protecting you. That whatever is happening in your life is happening for your good. You might not see it in that instant. In that instant, you will think, oh, my life is over today. But if you have this belief that, no, I cannot see the good, but there is somebody taking care of me. I am taken care of. If you can have that emotion, that will be the only saving grace at that point of time. That will be the only thing that can save you from going into depression or falling into a hole. Because once you are in the hole, it's very difficult to come out. So you have to stop yourself from falling into that hole of depression or any other negative emotion. And that can only happen if you can succeed in cultivating this energy of Ishwar Pranidhan, of surrendering. To believe that I am always taken care of. I am not alone. And to know that you're not alone, even when you feel alone, you feel no one understands me, no one can see what I'm going through. To know that there is a higher power who can see your entire life. You are only looking at this point and thinking, oh, my life is over. But there's a higher power that can see everything and knows probably there are better things planned for you. Even if somebody passed away, it was not personal. Okay, like what happens when there is death? We are left behind, so we are sad. But this soul that has departed, it had its own life purpose. It's got nothing to do with you. It's not a punishment to you that somebody passed away in your life. Okay, they had their own journey to live. They are living their own journey. They're living their own life path. Yes, you're all affected who are left behind. But it's not personal. You will move on. That incident had to happen for you to grow spiritually. And only when something bad happens, which we call bad, which is not really bad, it pushes us deeper into our spiritual journey. If you have everything you want in your life all the time, no one is going to practice yoga. No one is going to think, oh, what is this life? No one is going to want to meditate. We're just so busy having fun. But then that's how life has been created. It keeps bringing problems from time to time so that we take a step back and figure out, no, I need to understand what is happening. And it pushes us deeper into our spiritual journey. And that is what is Ishwar Pranidhan. So it's not like in one day you can cultivate this, oh, I have this power to surrender. But start from small things. Like you're really scared to do something. Just a small example, okay? You have a conversation with God or the universe. You say, okay, I'm leaving it up to you today. Just a test of my faith. And let's see, I'm going to do it. And let's see what's the worst that can happen. And you will see nothing happened. It was just your own fear that was stopping you. And you start from small things like this. And then when something really bad happens, you will be ready for it. You will. It doesn't mean you're not supposed to have emotions. You will not be sad, or you will not be angry, or you will not feel hurt. You will feel all of those things. You are supposed to feel all your emotions, but you will not lose your peace of mind. You will not get into depression. You will not think my life is completely over. Okay? So always know, always, no matter what happens, what, however bad you might think it is for our own good. This you can always believe. And start that already. No, whatever bad is happening, oh no, it's for my own good. Whenever you feel bad, okay, even if I feel lonely right now, I know there is somebody protecting me. Like, think of the first breakup you had in your life, okay, when you were 13, 14, whatever. Okay, and at that point of time, you think, oh no, how am I going to live without this person? How will I ever live? And look at yourself so many years later, living and thriving. And now when you look back, like, thank God I did not end up with this person. Thank God. So you see, at that point of time, it was like, oh no, my life is over. And after a year, like, oh my God, thank God. Somebody else was taking care of the big decisions. It was not left up to me. So this is what, we do not see what is happening. Okay. We don't know what is happening. We only see one point. So in times like these, it is important to just have faith. And that is Bhakti Yoga. Ishwar Pranidhan. Surrender. When you feel things out of your control, don't try to control anything. If they're out of your control, they're out of your control. Then you just abandon yourself and say, okay, now you take care of me, to this invisible energy around us. Okay. This is all I have for philosophy. Do you have any questions? No.
So you talked about Hinduism. How is it with Buddhism, Mr. Yoga? I'm just asking because I don't know.
It's the thing with all religions, actually. Okay, so Buddhism, Buddha was a Hindu. He was born in a Hindu family. He was born in India at that time. Today, that part is in Nepal, Lumbini. Buddha did not start Buddhism. In fact, the only thing Buddha told his disciples also was, when I die, do not make God out of me. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing they did. They made a God out of Buddha. Mm-hmm. Buddha, the word Buddha means enlightened one. So anyone who's enlightened can be a Buddha. So Siddhartha Gautam was his name. Siddhartha Gautam became a Buddha after years of meditation. And he was just telling people the secrets of life, how to live life. He was not starting a new religion. Jesus Christ was not starting Christianity. He was just telling people how to live life. He was telling them the miracle of life, that how you should be grateful that you're alive. Somebody else started Christianity. And then they blamed it on Jesus. Jesus did not give all these rules that the Catholic Church started, or whatever rules were there, or how you are a bad person or a good person. Jesus couldn't care less. He was busy telling people how to love life, how to be happy. He was a guru, if you say in today's language. But we made God out of him. And it's the same thing. So Buddhism and Hinduism, there are a lot of similarities, because they came from this guy who was living in India at that point of time, who was from a Hindu family. That's why there are a lot of similarities. But what has changed is... what his disciples wanted to change as starting a religion. He was not starting a religion. It's the same case with the Bible, the New Testament. Yeah, you know, the New Testament is not just a new version of the Old Testament, what the Jews read. The New Testament is a culmination of around 10-15 books. So these people, the church of that time, to start Christianity, they took things from different books, they put it in the New Testament, called it the Bible. So it's not God who came down and gave you all these rules. It's these people, the church, who wanted all the power in their control at that point of time, who did not even want to hear that the earth is round. These were the people who had the power to put things in a book and give it to people and then say, oh, this is what God says. God doesn't say anything. God says, you are God. That's what Jesus said, that do as I do. But he did not mean that do as exactly him. He meant he is the Son of God. He is the child of God, just as all of us are. If you think he is God, he has those magical powers within him. You also have those magical powers within you. There is no rule book. You will decide based on your own level of spirituality, what are the rules for you to follow. And that goes for any religion. It's good to start with religion because it brings some discipline into life. Okay, it teaches us many things. But after a certain point, religion is only there to control you. Any religion that tells you God is out there and not within is a religion you should come out of immediately and start questioning. And that's why Jnana Yoga. Always question what you are being told. Is this serving my higher purpose? Okay. So it's not like religion is 100% bad, but at the same time, they try to control us a lot. Okay. Not all religious people are good. The religious books might hold a lot of knowledge, but also they were passed down into the hands of anybody. And then the preachers, the pastors, it doesn't matter what they're saying actually. No one is controlling them. They say whatever comes into their mind. If you've heard any of these conversations, same goes for religious gurus in India. They say anything, like no one is controlling them. Whatever comes in their mind at that moment of time is passed down as knowledge. And if you're gullible, you might take it. If you're questioning, you might tell him to stop. Your aim in life should only be to raise your own vibrations. That's all. That's all God is telling you. No other rules to life. Okay. After this, once you've cultivated all these habits in you, is when Patanjali is saying you should start with asanas. So non-duality will anyway always come only with meditation. And over here, we are just in the first two steps. Then you start with your asanas, then pranayam, then pratyahara, dharana, dhyan, samadhi. So these are just something you should cultivate to be good human beings. These are emotions or habits you should have to be a good human being. Because without this, your yoga practice has no value. It's not like anybody will test, oh, do you know your yamas and niyamas? Are you this, this, this before you start your yoga practice? No one in a yoga studio asks you all this. You can still do your yoga.
So it became sport.
Yes. And at the same time, it just stays like that. It stays as an exercise. Like you're wasting your own time. It cannot go deeper. Otherwise, just asanas can take you very far. But have you brought all this into your life? Has yoga practice managed to change you in any way? When we do yoga, also because we work with different energies, asanas, I'm talking about asanas right now. Try not to drink water in the class. Okay, it's not like any other sport because we work with subtle energies. Okay, your subtle energy is your subtle body is working at the same time. Unless you feel, oh, I'm going to fall down. Okay, you don't need to drink water. That emotion, that sensation will pass away. Okay, you do your class, you do your shavasana, and then once the yoga class is over, if you need to drink water, and you should because you've twisted so much and everything, so your intestines have really. And then if you don't drink water, there will be dehydration. But during the class, avoid drinking water. Okay, because especially of all the twisting and turning that needs to happen. Then your spine, it works like your highway, the highway of your energy. Okay, Kamala Otarut. So your spine is very important. That's why we always stress upon sitting up straight. But you will also see, that's why there are so many postures in yoga where you're basically moving your spine because you're as young as your spine. If you have an old spine, you can't bend, back pain, this, that, you are old. If you have a young spine, doesn't matter if you're 70 or 80 years old, you will stay young because the energy is flowing better and you can move around better. So always take a lot of care of your spine. Okay, that's why we do all the twisting, turning and the motions with the spine.